Hello, I'm Shane Grin. This is number 0588, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0588. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Bob Innes, the man behind RentAHitman.com, a humor site that some people have been taking seriously and inquiring about his services, much to his surprise when he checked the inbox to the domain name 2 years after it started up.
About 2.5, 3 years later, I go in and check the catch-all inbox, and I was just shocked at the number of unsolicited emails that I had received from people around the world seeking services such as asset extraction, or how much for this, or do you service these countries, are you hiring? It just really was something that I wasn't prepared for.
Ralph F. Frank is the author of Lady B Spots Trouble, a book that helps adults discuss body safety with very young children.
Back to the early 1980s, when the whole topic of sexual abuse really came out. And at that time, I was working as a social worker in downtown Vancouver with street children, and many who had come from, you know, real backgrounds of sexual abuse. And I think we all have thought at that time that now we are finally addressing this issue. And if we do, then over time, it'll be dealt with. But I think what we've learned is that it still is such a big issue.
And Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter is going to be looking at nothing. Well, actually, 5 decades of the comedy of Jerry Seinfeld with Is This Anything? So let's find out why seniors have to move to Florida, and a whole lot more of nothing later on the Stuff File program.
Plus, there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guests later. The person who told you this was show number 0588 was film composer Shane Grin. And you can check out Shane's website at shanegrin.ca. And Shane is spelled S-H-A-Y-N-E. Grin is spelled also with a Y, G-R-Y-N. That's shanegrin.ca. Thank you very much, Shane, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, there are certain tropes in comedy that annoy me because they are cliches, often without merit or creativity. When stand-up comics make jokes about airplane food or cops eating donuts, I just roll my eyes because unless they can come up with something new and creative, topics like those have such a been-there-done-that quality that doesn't equate to reality and, for me, just screams of laziness. So it pains me when a story like this one comes along which literally feeds a stereotype. Here we go. Police Constable Simon Reed of the Cambridgeshire Police will be the subject of a misconduct hearing this week after being accused of switching prices on a box of donuts in February. Reed, shopping at a Tesco Extra store while on duty and uniformed, allegedly selected a $13 box of Krispy Kreme donuts and replaced its barcode with one from the produce section that lowered the price to 9 cents, then went through the self-checkout line. In papers filed before the hearing, Reed was said to bring discredit upon the police service because a reasonable member of the public would be justifiably appalled that a police officer had acted dishonestly and without integrity. Again, it is the comedy world that will be appalled. Stories like these in the news is the fuel that hack comics seem to gorge on. How can you spot a hack comic? Well, It's like when you go on a cruise ship and you see a comic on stage and the first line out of his mouth to bond with the audience is, "Anybody here from out of town?" It's a sad day. Meanwhile, in San Juan, 49-year-old Puerto Rico police officer Fernando Leon Berdicia is accused of stealing $1,300 worth of merchandise from a Home Depot on November the 16th while wearing his uniform. Leon has been suspended from the department and a court date has been set for December the 2nd. Remember back in the day when the worst thing a cop did was look at you menacingly while wearing dark sunglasses? Oh wait, I'm confused. That was just in every single Hitchcock movie ever made. My bad. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Naugatuck, Connecticut police said they arrested a half-dressed man for humping trees, screaming, eating branches, and assaulting officers. In other words, he was, you know, getting a little wood. 36-year-old John Edward Fignar was charged with second-degree criminal trespass, second-degree breach of peace, interfering with an officer, and assault on a public safety officer. Police said they were sent to a backyard on November the 12th at around 3 p.m. When they arrived, they saw Fignar run into a nearby house, which caused its residents to flee in fear. Fignar eventually came out and was taken into custody. While in custody, however, he both spat and assaulted officers. The suspect was evaluated with a checkup from the neck up at the hospital, then held on a $25,000 bond.
I talked to the trees, but they don't listen to me.
You know, now that I think about it, that was Clint Eastwood from the 1969 musical Paint Your Wagon. So he went from talking to trees 40 years ago to talking to a chair on stage less than a decade ago. My, how he's evolved. But getting back to our tree humper, I do have one question. If a man is humping trees and screaming and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? Deep thought. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There was a story that I was going to share a couple of weeks ago as an idiot of the day on the show. It dealt with a woman who tried to hire a hitman from a fake humor website called rentahitman.com. But instead, I decided to dig deeper and reach out to Bob Innes, a.k.a. Guido Finelli, the man who created and runs the website. Bob joins us via Skype from California. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. When I first saw this story, I laughed hysterically, and then I went to your website and laughed even more at the idea that somebody could look at this website and take it seriously. But I guess the sad reality is the woman that I was looking at in this particular story isn't the only one, correct?
Oh, no, she's not the only one. In fact, Wendy, the person you're referring to, is one of my more favorite clients, you might say. But, oh, no, there's been plenty of others that have stumbled across the website.
And the thing that's interesting is, if I'm not mistaken, and there's a great article, by the way, written about this in Rolling, is it Rolling Stone? Rolling Stone magazine?
It is Rolling Stone.
Yeah. The thing that's rather interesting about this is when you started this website, the idea of hitman was not what we normally understand to be a hitman when we think of like mafia films, right?
Yeah, that is correct. It was more of a play on words for an IT startup that I was working on.
So when did it start receiving requests from people who were looking to do harm to others?
So, yeah, in February of 2005, that's when I registered the domain for an IT startup. Business plans didn't exactly take shape. So I put the domain on kind of a hold. I put it up for sale. I put a splash page that said this domain is for sale. And I had it on an auction site. I was just going to dump the domain. And nobody seemed really interested in rentahitman.com at the time. So I was a little disappointed. I figured I was going to at least get the opportunity to flip it. About 2.5-3 years later, I go in and check the catch-all inbox that I had set up on the website. And I was just shocked at the number of emails that unsolicited emails that I had received from people around the world seeking services, such as asset extraction or how much for this, or do you service these countries? Are you hiring? It just really was something that I wasn't prepared for.
It's the "are you hiring" one that kills me. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Someone's looking for this job. Wow, absolutely. So you then decided to have a little fun with it. And again, I urge people to go to the website, which is rentahitman.com. To the average human being, it's quite clear that this is all tongue-in-cheek. When did it become a situation that, let's be honest, you would have to call the police? Because I would assume that if you had this site up and you didn't do anything, some people might actually think, you know, in law enforcement that you were serious.
Yeah. There's a couple of different little red flags or Easter eggs you might see on the website that would... It was my idea or my way of letting law enforcement know, hey, this is kind of a joke. First of all, the website does have its own HIPAA disclaimer. Here in the United States, it's HIPAA is the medical privacy, that's what that acronym stands for. Health Insurance Portability and Privacy Act or something like that.
Right.
Portability Act. The HIPAA for my website is the Hitman Information Privacy and Protection Act of 1964. All right. Doesn't mean anything there is no act. There is no HIPAA Act. Secondly, the website has a banner ad that says, "Has your credit card number been stolen on the internet? Check it here." Well, if you click on that banner, it opens up a new browser window to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. So, I mean, those are just two of the little quirky things on the website that would kind of tip people off.
So when somebody actually is serious enough to get in contact with you and want to have someone hit, what is your response usually to that? You kind of almost lead them toward the cops themselves, right?
Yeah, well, okay, so over the last 15 years at this point, I've made it easy for the solicitor. I've created a web form so that they can fill out in their own words their name, their email address, their phone number, their contact address, a target's name, address where services are requested, their reason for contacting us, description of what they would like done, target's email address, target's Facebook, social media accounts, and any additional information so that they can fill it out in their own words under the HIPAA privacy protection, which there is none. And when I receive an email from somebody that meets that has all of that information, I'll then vet it. I'll certainly be able to take a look at the email, such as Wendy's. I'll go in and do a little sleuthing on my side, see if they're connected on Facebook or social media, or, you know, how they might be connected. Is it a bad business deal? Is it a relationship? And I'll start gathering the information that way. In the meantime, I send out an email to the solicitor, in this case, Wendy. And I'll ask two very simple questions. Do you still require our services? And would you like me to put you in contact with the field operative? this is their chance to back out at this point. If they say no, or I don't hear from them again, yes, maybe they figured it out. Maybe they've had a change of heart, or maybe it was just a hoax or a joke to begin with. But if they respond with yes and, you know, put me in contact with the field operative, I feel it's my duty at this point to go ahead and make sure that they get that field operative consultation. In Wendy's particular case, she chose to meet with a field operative.
Who obviously was an undercover agent.
Oh, yes, I forgot. yeah, so the field operatives that I deploy, you might say, are law enforcement here in the United States.
Now, with the popularity of this website and stories like Wendy's now out there, are you still getting requests for hitmen?
Absolutely. In fact, you might say business is booming.
Wow.
Since Wendy's request, and that was in, received a request in mid-July, by the way, I have had several other cases that have people looking for services that I clearly don't offer. Hmm. So despite the media attention that this has gotten, and you know, all the news stories that are out there, emails are still being received from people as recently as this week on solutions to their particular issues.
Now, with all of the publicity, you know, there's no accounting for brains out there. People are just dumb in some cases, but some people are also dumb and psychopathic. Are you ever concerned or worried about someone coming after you saying, you know, I went to this website in good faith and you've turned me into the cops or are about to turn me into the cops. I'm now coming after you?
Yeah, you know, I have to be cognizant of the dangers that are out there. And yes, there are dangerous people. I certainly understand that. My whole position in this is, you know, these people sought out the website. I didn't seek them out. I gave everybody an out. You know, they didn't have to respond to my email. Those that want a free consultation, I'll certainly be able to be that matchmaker. I'll make sure that they get it. There are a lot of dangerous people that are out there. I'm not one that lives in fear, though. This is a $9.20 website that has, at this point, prevented over 140 murders, school shootings, child trafficking, other crimes against children. And, you know, it's become my personal mission to see that I'm helping people that may never even know that they were in danger in the first place.
And to that end, I understand you actually have a GoFundMe page?
The website is self-funded. So I do accept donations through PayPal or Venmo. Okay. It does help the website stay lit, you know, and keep on running. It's also helping carry it to the next level, which is a pretty killer book that I'm working on right now. I want to share my story with people. I want to let them know how this started and what they can do to help. And, you know, the simple fact is the internet is a dangerous place.
Well, when your book is done, will you come back on the program and talk to us once again?
I would love to, Peter. That would be great.
Bob, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, or should I say Guido. the website is rentahitman.com, and I thank you for taking the time out of your busy day of surveillance and criminality to be on the program with us.
Absolutely. Peter, just want to say thank you for having me. Hit me up anytime, figuratively speaking, of course. And I'd love to talk to you soon.
Bob Innes, the man behind the rentahitman.com site. Again, I urge you to take a look at that amazing site and also to read the story from Rolling Stone magazine that shares Bob's story in more detail. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0588, and you'll find links to Bob's site, plus also links to that Rolling Stone article. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of Lady B Spots Trouble, plus Stuart Nallman is in with another edition of Book Banter, and we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere for all of your devices on Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. Plus, you can find it on some fine radio stations, such as WLSL, LPFM in Dade City, Florida, and CKLU 96.7 FM in Sudbury, Ontario. Just a couple of radio stations. Thank you for being with us for the ride on the Stuff File program. Don't touch that dial. Well, two recent graduates of the Sydney Grammar School in Australia hatched a plan to skirt COVID-19 restrictions on large gatherings to host a graduation party while their parents were out of town. Outdoor gatherings are limited to 30 people and indoor events are capped at 10, but up to 150 guests can attend weddings if they follow social distancing protocols. On November 12th, the unnamed best friends, both male, both straight, married, and I'm doing air quotes, in a backyard ceremony and planned a 150-person party to follow until their parents caught wind of the event online and returned to put an end to it. We shut down the planned private celebratory event as soon as we found out about it, and thankfully nobody was put at risk, one of the lad's dad said. Interesting. You know, I grew up in the 60s. It wasn't uncommon back in the day that if you did something wrong, your parents might make you follow through with it. For instance, if you snuck someone's cigarettes or a cigar and were caught smoking it, a dad might make you smoke a whole pack or an entire stogie as punishment. Using that theory, maybe the parents should have let those two little straight boys get hitched. Let that reality sink in.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, of course not.
I mean, it's fine if that's who you are.
Absolutely.
I mean, I have many gay friends.
My father's gay.
Yes. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, a medical helicopter coming in to a rooftop landing at the University of Southern California's Keck Hospital in Los Angeles didn't quite stick the landing. The chopper landed on its side right at the edge of the roof. It wasn't carrying a critical patient, but rather a donated heart. A patient in the hospital was waiting for the heart for a transplant. The pilot suffered minor injuries, and firefighters found the package with the heart and handed it to a waiting hospital employee wearing surgical scrubs who promptly tripped and dropped it. Another employee grabbed it and ran the heart to the waiting surgical team. The heart itself was fine after being dropped, a hospital spokesman said, and the implant was successful. That's one lucky patient. She could have easily ended up, you know, brokenhearted. I've seen the video of this guy tripping and dropping the heart. It really stretches the 5-second rule when it comes to meat hitting the ground. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Ralph F. Frank is the author of Lady B Spots Trouble, which is the first in a trilogy about personal safety skills for young children. It's a child-friendly way for adults and children to talk about body safety. Ralph joins us on the line from Vancouver Island. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Peter. Thanks so much for having me here.
Thanks for being on the program. Now, you're a social worker and a registered clinical counselor and an educator. You have been an educator for over 40 years. And I'm just curious to know, from your professional background, is this something that is really necessary because numbers are high as to problems with people and children?
Is it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, let me just correct one thing. My background has been mainly as a social worker and as a clinical counselor. And then later on, I really went into the education field because I thought this was such an important area. Maybe I can even go back about 40 years, which, you know, back to the early 1980s when the whole topic of sexual abuse really came out. And at that time, I was working as a social worker in downtown Vancouver with street children and many who had come from, you know, real backgrounds of sexual abuse. And I think we all have thought at that time that now we are finally addressing this issue. And if we do, then over time it'll be dealt with. But I think what we've learned is that it still is such a big issue. And so one of the things that I came to back about 10, 12 years ago is that maybe we need to add an educational component to it. At the time, I was working with First Nations children here on Vancouver Island, many who had been abused as well. And I was going in and out of the schools. And one of the things I realized is that the schools really weren't teaching this. And they had introduced this program back in the 1980s, but, you know, teachers have to deal with so many different subjects. I have so much respect for teachers and what they have to deal with, and they can't cover everything. And so I decided, well, if the program isn't existing, why not create one?
Well,
so we created go ahead.
The reason why I asked the initial question is something that you just touched on, and I'm paraphrasing it because of the general idea that some in, for lack of a better term, mainstream populations have, and that is, oh, well, that's an issue amongst people of a certain group, or that's a situation of people of a certain financial status or area or problematic upbringing. But what you're saying is this is a problem that is mainstream and could be in anybody's home.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, I'm not a statistician, but from my understanding is that, you know, how children are touched in appropriate and inappropriate ways crosses every culture background, every economic, you know, group. It's, it touches all of us. And the numbers I've always heard over the years that in, you know, if you take girls from about, you know, up to about 18, about 1 in 3 will have been, you know, touched in inappropriate ways. And for boys, it's anywhere between 1 in 5 and 1 in 7.
Now,
that's a lot of children.
Now, when you mention those numbers, are we specifically talking about adults doing this or other children?
Well, that's a good question, you know, and sometimes it gets to be a fine line. And I think particularly, like sometimes some of the people who are doing the touching might be teenagers themselves. And at some point, you know, it's almost like they cross a certain boundary. But I'd say most of these teenagers probably have had issues in their past. And now they're growing up and have never known how to deal with it. And unfortunately, it becomes a generational thing. So... I think it's basically adults, but we certainly, you know, see teenagers in some very inappropriate situations with some older people, you know, sometimes a couple years older, sometimes more so. But what I'm dealing with in these books is really starting to teach young children, you know, starting with kindergarten, because that's what we learned in our pilot program, is that children are really open to this. If we do it in a way that's fun. And that might almost sound, you know, contradictory. How do you talk about a subject that's so difficult, you know, with the concept of having fun? But what I've learned, and I think what many educators have learned, this certainly isn't just me, is that we can teach difficult subjects by making it interesting and bringing in, like we brought in, you know, lovable characters, you know, stuffed animals, dolls, we did skits, you know, we had coloring pages, and by bringing in an element of play and fun, the children were open to learning, you know, really important lessons.
Now
that's what I've done now in this book.
You mentioned that the, you know, as early as 5 years old, the children are open to it. Is it a harder sell on the adults, their parents, who sometimes might not want to touch the issue?
Well, sure, I think so. And one of the reasons is it's not that adults don't want to deal with these things, it's that they don't know how. I mean, it's a difficult subject. And who wants to think of a child they care about being touched in an inappropriate way? And so many people don't know how to deal with it. And I have, by the way, a background in communications. And so one of the things that I learned is that if you can find a safe way of having this conversation, then people... It becomes much, much easier for adults. And an example I often give is like when we try to teach young children how to cross the street. I mean, that's a dangerous situation, right? But we don't teach fear. We teach them safety skills, you know, looking both ways, you know holding an adult's hand until they're old enough to do it themselves, you know, the whole series of skills. And we make it an exciting adventure. When you get to be a little older, you'll be able to cross the street all by yourself. So by bringing in that safety skills, but without creating any fear, children learn how to do this, and we can teach about safe and unsafe touch in exactly the same way, just focusing on skills and not on fear.
Well, I guess the reason why a lot of parents are skittish about the idea is, and to use the example you say of crossing the street, there's nothing sexual about crossing the street, at least in most instances. But when the minute you start talking about touching, people's minds obviously go to sex, and they don't want to discuss that or bring it up when it comes to children. They feel that if they talk about it, they have to explain too many things that they feel maybe the child isn't prepared to understand, or they're prepared to have the child understand.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question, Peter. And the first thing to understand is that this is absolutely nothing about sex at all. I mean, I've actually stopped using the term sexual abuse quite a bit and talk more about safe and unsafe touch, or wanted touch and unwanted touch, because it's really about creating healthy boundaries for children. And as adults, we deal with this every day. Like just every time, well, back when we were still able to have contact before the pandemic, just how you shake hands with somebody. Sometimes we just get a kind of a feeling, oh, I don't like this touch, you know, or when we're in a public space, maybe on a bus or waiting in line, how much distance do we want between ourselves and the person next to us? You know, we make decisions as adults all the time about our physical boundaries and how we engage in this. And we almost do it without thinking. And we can teach children that as well. That, for example, something as simple as a hug. Now, one hug may just feel really good. We call that having a yes feeling. And in the book, we have a grandpa who gives yes feeling hugs. One of our main characters, Jesse, was a 5-year-old boy. You know, he loves his hugs from his grandpa, but there's also no feeling hugs, and you just get this intuition, this gut feeling that it just doesn't feel good. So that's a no feeling. And what we try to teach children is that if they get that no feeling, they're allowed to say no. I don't want this hug. You know, we're not talking about sexual abuse here. We're just talking about safe boundaries, really. And if they have a hard time saying no, or if the adult isn't listening, then they can identify adults that they trust. Could be the parents, could be a teacher at school, could be a grandparent, you know, who they trust, and that they can go to that adult and ask for support and help.
Mm. You brought up a very interesting point about someone not necessarily liking a hug, even if it's an innocent one, that they're allowed to say no and not feel any shame in that. And I'll give you a perfect example. I am a hugger. I haven't hugged anybody since February, but I am a hugger. And I grew up with a lot of nieces and nephews, and they adored being hugged. I have one nephew who didn't like being hugged. And some people would say, well, what's wrong with you? And the thing is, if he doesn't want to be hugged, he doesn't want to be hugged.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I also am a hugger, Peter. So if we ever meet post-pandemic, I look forward to giving you a hug. You know, but many people aren't. And, you know, one of the things we always told our grandchildren when they would come into our house, we would say, okay, look, it's polite to say hello and goodbye. We expect that. That just matters. But whether you want to be hugged or not is up to you. And I have the same thing. I have some grandchildren who love to be hugged, and I have some who don't. And there's nothing wrong with them. They just don't want a hug. And so then we do a high five instead, you know, or whatever. We just say hello. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that's just their own personal preference.
Your book, Lady B Spots Trouble, as I mentioned, it's the first of a trilogy. So what are the plans? And volume one is Allowed to Say No series. So what is entailed in this one, and what do you envision for the other two?
Okay, well, first of all, these are also books that can be taught by teachers. So Lady B Spots Trouble is for kindergarten, and the next two, Lady B Safety School and Lady B to the Rescue, will be for grade one and grade two. And each one, by the way, comes with a teacher's guide, which will have lesson plans, coloring pages, so something they can just use very easily. And also there'll be a coloring book, you know, for families. The first book is really just a very much an introduction about how to have a conversation about safety. And we have this one phrase that's a teaching point. If you get a no feeling, you're allowed to say no and ask adults you trust for help. And in a very kind of colorful story where the boy who loves adventures and is kind of very feisty but safety-conscious ladybug, they just kind of they go through this. The second book will be more where there is kind of a neighbor who, it's not sexual abuse, but it's just being touched in a way that doesn't feel good. And so he's trying to, so Lady B has her little safety school, and she teaches him about what he can do. And the third book is we introduce another character, a girl named Selena, who has been kissed by an adult, and she really doesn't know how to deal with it. And they help her, you know, go talk to a school counselor and to get the support she needs. So it's a series from kindergarten to grade two. And it's just about, you know, yeah, it's really just about starting very basically and then getting into a few problematic areas. But even the problematic areas, we deal in a child-appropriate way. There's nothing frightening in any of these at all. And the adventures and the stories are colorful. We have my illustrator, Lisa Shim, just does beautiful pictures that kids will just love. And I mean, who cannot love a little feisty ladybug? Well, nothing frightening at all about her.
There's the yin and the yang of this. It's a book series that I kind of wish didn't have to exist. But on the other hand, it's a book series that we really all need. And so, therefore, I thank you for putting this thing together in such a child friendly way. And I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Well, and thank you for having me, because I think it is such an important subject. So I just really appreciate you inviting me. Thank you, Peter.
Ralph F. Frank, author of Lady B Spots Trouble. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0588, and you'll find links to Ralph's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Stuart Nullman, which of course is never a show about nothing.
No, definitely not. Not this time, Peter. We could say I'm going to be reviewing a book about nothing, but, that hardly qualifies. Well, maybe it qualifies, maybe it doesn't. But let's hear me out, and maybe you can judge for yourself, okay? So let's say, Peter, you have to hand it to Jerry Seinfeld, because for 5 decades he's built a career in stand-up comedy, starting from the bottom during the mid-70s in such New York clubs as Catch a Rising Star in the comic strip. And from there he came a steady stream of club appearances, then to regular appearances on The Tonight Show, the Johnny Carson version, and then transcended his act to TV with his NBC sitcom Seinfeld, which dominated the network's Thursday night lineup throughout most of the 90s. And when the sitcom went off the air in 1998, after a brief hiatus, he went back to his stand-up roots, performing in theaters, stadiums, arenas, and yes, comedy clubs. And he even made a return to TV with the popular yet unorthodox streaming interview series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, which I really liked. Wish I had some of those cars. Get the coffee. And how did
you say liked as if it were the past tense. I mean, he's still doing them.
Oh, he is. I haven't had a chance to see the latest editions of it, but from what I've seen, when he started off the show and was on that streaming service Crackle, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's on Netflix now.
Oh yeah, another reason to go subscribe to Netflix. Now, I ask you, how did Jerry Seinfeld make this indelible mark in the world of comedy? Well, here's the answer. He did it with material based on the mundane, everyday things, ideas, and activities that we all take for granted. And these were the things that we were all familiar with, but never stopped to realize what we do, why we do it, and the full implications behind them. And with Seinfeld's simple way of twisting, analyzing, dissecting these everyday things, he brought the art of observational comedy to a whole new level, which was all made complete with his unique style of glib and high-pitched delivery. Now, in his new book, the first since his 1993 bestseller, Sign Language, Jerry Seinfeld has opened the doors to his expansive comedy vault to share some of his best stand-up material from the 70s to the 2010s with Is This Anything? And if you want to know what that is, that Is This Anything is actually a question that stand-up comedians ask each other about a new bit that the specific comedian wants to try out in front of an audience. But this book, when you read it, you could also call it The Complete Jerry Seinfeld or The Evolution of a Stand-Up Comedy Legend. It's basically a collection of Seinfeld's best-known stand-up material over the past 5 decades and deals with a wide assortment of topics such as traveling on airplanes, seniors in Florida, being unemployed, socks, children's birthday parties, clowns, relationship commitment, cell phones, the internet, energy drinks, and weddings, to name a few. Now, personally speaking, reading some of the earlier material recalls the time when I first saw Seinfeld perform in person, which was for the live HBO gala during the 1989 Just for Laughs Festival. I remember him talking about the chicks and the checks and about, Tide detergent. You know, when he said, if you think you have a T-shirt with bloodstains all over it, maybe laundry isn't your biggest problem right now. And readers will have shared that same Seinfeld-like experience and will get that same reaction. And many of the routines in the 90s section of the book will have readers realize that many of them became the basis for future Seinfeld episodes. So Is This Anything is a book that uncovers a lot of comedy material gems from the man who became the leading figure of stand-up comedy for nearly 50 years and set the standard for future generations of those who want to aspire to and follow Seinfeld's path to success in the world of comedy. And after reading this book, you'll really have to give Jerry Seinfeld a lot of credit for doing the impossible and build a successful career for telling jokes that essentially dealt about nothing.
I got a question for you. Yes. Both you and I have been entwined with the Just for Laughs folks for many a decade.
Yeah.
In my case, working backstage for 20 years at Just for Laughs, and therefore being behind the scenes and hanging out with the comics and the managers and the entourages that is part of the comedy world.
Yeah.
Without naming any names and throwing anybody under the bus, do you find that there are two groups of people, one slightly smaller than the other, but two groups of people in the comedy world, those who revere Seinfeld and everything he's done, including his television show, mm-hmm. and those who don't?
Yeah, I mean, there is, but also there's also a group that was like that was divided up over that comedian Carlos Mencia. I remember that.
Yeah.
And I remember one comedian, I mean, when in 1994, when he appeared on his when he appeared on the gala in 1994, he was like the closing act, and he wore a T-shirt that said "Kill Seinfeld."
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the thing. I've heard, you know, you could walk into a room of comedians and you will find people who absolutely adore Seinfeld, mm-hmm. and love everything he does, and you can turn around and find somebody in the room who just hates him and. It was weird.
Yeah, I mean,
and we're not talking people who are just starting. We're talking about people who are established comics, who either love or hate Jerry Seinfeld for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, you can be hypothetical and theorize a lot, saying that you know, maybe he's getting a little. They may think that he's getting a little lazy with his comedy and it's too predictable, or some that are a little bit jealous and bitter that they haven't reached the same heights that he did.
But I think it goes a little further than that, because when I first started hearing about the like-dislike factor of Jerry Seinfeld, as you recall, one of his big breaks was playing at Just for Laughs. So
yeah.
he wasn't the Jerry Seinfeld of television fame when I already started hearing about people who weren't crazy about him.
And he first appeared in 1985, the first year of the English Festival.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah. And if it went back that early.
Yeah, it went back to, because remember when Seinfeld first went on the air, it was a deal for four shows.
Yeah.
And right. It didn't do well.
Yeah. It got, the audience, usually when you go to a pilot taping, they give you like these response cards to fill out, and they say Seinfeld himself admitted that the pilot of the Seinfeld Chronicles, the original title of the series, got probably one of the worst reviews and the worst ratings ever for a test audience.
But I remember the following year that it didn't do well before it became the big hit that it did become. I remember the following year at the festival that year, some people were kind of gleeful at the fact that his show did not do well.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's interesting. Okay. Anyway, I'm got you off track here as we went down, you know, bitter memory lane with some people. And again, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, because some of the names I could mention as to who did not like him are big names nowadays. But anyway, this book is...
It's called Is This Anything by Jerry Seinfeld. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $40. And yes, it is on the New York Times bestseller list, too. It's probably going to be, it wasn't number one, but it's still up there on the list.
Yes, I'm just trying to envision in my mind right now the people that the fact that it was number one on the bestseller list, the people that's pissing off. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Like former President Barack Obama.
Exactly. Anyway, what are some of the other books you mentioned in this genre? You can
well,
mention?
The book I mentioned previously, earlier in this review, Sign Language, his 1993 bestseller, which basically revived the whole genre of comedians writing their own books, some really good, some really bad. And became bestsellers in their own right. And also, speaking about joke archives, there was one book that was released 30 years ago called Milton Berle's Private Joke File.
Yes,
it was a huge doorstopper of a book with, you know, sort of like a fraction of his joke file from, like, you know, 60, 70, 80 years of comedy. So, yeah, so, I put that in the same league as Jerry Seinfeld, but Burrell's book was a little bit bigger.
Okay, and this, and again, we're running out of time, so this week's book is?
Is This Anything by Jerry Seinfeld. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $40.
Yes, and by the way, all those other comedians who weren't big fans of his probably liked Festivus a lot. How can people find you, sir?
Well, not at the Catch a Rising Star, because it's no longer there, but in the pages of the Montreal Times every week, in print or at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We have a few more Stuff File news stories and, of course, an idiot of the day, so let's get right to it. And, you know, we often talk on this show about people who are caught doing things with vehicles, and it seems that so many times, almost every show, there's somebody out there who doesn't have a valid driver's license. And every once in a while, I know, like a broken record, I say to myself, or I say to you folks, wow, this one tops the cake. This is the one person who doesn't have a driver's license that is really out there. But I think this one is the topper. An Ontario provincial police officer pulled over a speeding vehicle. The unnamed driver doesn't hold a valid driver's license, the officer found. Yep. The 60-year-old man had been banned from driving for life. In fact, a records check revealed he had been banned from driving for life 8 times. What is he, a cat? He was charged with driving while prohibited, driving without insurance, speeding, and using a license plate not authorized for the vehicle. He is scheduled to appear in court in December. Gee, I wonder how he'll get there. 71-year-old Douglas Allen Hatley of Lakeland, Florida, was arrested on November 16th after the Florida Highway Patrol said he found a metal light pole by the side of the road in Tampa and tried to sell it to Eagle Metals Recycling. The recycling center turned him away because he didn't have documentation for the pole, and officers responding to reports of a 1997 Camry with a pole twice its length strapped to the top pulled him over soon afterwards. Hatley told the troopers a highway maintenance worker, quote, gave it to me, unquote. He was charged with third-degree grand theft. Finders keepers, losers weepers. Anybody check to see if that Camry was his, by the way? Yeah. Driving a car with a pole on top of it that's twice, if not 3 times, the length of the car. It's like the Griswolds bringing home a Christmas tree in the National Lampoon movie. Anyway, let's start off this next story with a quote. The guy who was looking at the used Chevy Silverado said he had his own financing. That's according to sales manager Gino Gonzalez. But when Gonzalez, as requested, went to get a Carfax report, he didn't even make it to the office of the Orange, California used car lot where he worked. I heard the hood shut, Gonzalez recalled. I turned around and he was already climbing into the truck and he proceeded to drive off. Gonzalez chased the Chevy on foot, which was as efficacious as one might expect. After more than a year, that's right, after more than a year, Orange police say they found the $29,000 pickup at a police station in Los Angeles. 45-year-old L.A. police officer Matthew Caleros was arrested for vehicle theft. He has been assigned home by the LAPD during the investigation. Getting arrested for car theft is a poor investment, no matter what's on the Carfax, by the way. A cop stealing a Chevy Suburban. Wow. At least he wasn't stealing donuts. That, folks, is a callback. And, boys and girls, it's time for that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The Marion County, Florida Sheriff's Office already knew whoever was behind a string of burglaries weren't exactly high-level criminal masterminds. All they stole from multiple convenience stores in Ocala was lottery tickets and cigarettes. They had several leads, however. They found the burglars left behind a shoe, some tools, and a wallet. The latter belonged to 23-year-old Marcus Reeves, and deputies simply went to his house and knocked on the door. Reeves confessed and implicated his partner in crime, 41-year-old Robert Hobby, who clearly needs a new one. Both men were arrested, charged with 14 felony counts, and named by the department the dumbest thieves of the week. Well, the cops have already stated it, so it's official. But you know I have to ask. I mean, why? Oh, why? If you're planning a string of convenience store robberies, would you leave behind a shoe, tools, and your wallet? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0588. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links to all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0588. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.